Hi everyone. Let me un. Okay. I'd rather not look at myself. So welcome. I'm going to speak for a little while, and then there'll be time for a Q&A. So I'd like to just share a few things that can be helpful with working with pain during retreats. It's not comprehensive. We don't have time for something comprehensive. So just there'll be a few things that might be useful for you. And there are different kinds of pain, and we might use different approaches at different times. There isn't just one way to work with pain. Some pain or discomfort responds really well to just changing our posture. So it's important to first check that doesn't solve a lot of the issues around pain. For instance, some people with neck and mid-back discomfort, like very simple things like putting a pillow under their hands so their hands aren't hanging down, can be really helpful for relieving tension in the shoulders or neck. Sometimes just sitting in one posture for too long for our bodies. Some people are used to they can do it without any problem, but we're all individuals, and sometimes sitting all day long in one posture is too much for us, and we're actually injuring ourselves in a certain way. So it's important to pace ourselves. And for instance, for myself, I've often used alternate postures throughout the day where I might do most of my sits on the floor cross-legged and then do a couple of them on a bench. And then I'd always listen to Dharma talk on a chair. So my body would have a little bit of a break. That allowed me to have an easeful retreat in a way that instead of just bearing through sitting on the floor and, the way I thought I should do it for a long time. It's really important that if we find ourselves t so tied with discomfort or pain that we can't get interested in our experience, we're just bracing ourselves, waiting for the sit to be over, it's much better to move to something more comfortable. And even if it's a slouchy posture, it doesn't matter. At that point, it's just not helpful to bear with the pain. And find a posture where your mind can still stay interested, stay engaged. You can, ask yourself, really consciously ask yourself, is it wise to stay in this position? And if you're not decided, don't rush it. Set it aside and just say, well, I'll do this for about 15 minutes and then see how it is. That way, you don't spend the next 15 minutes struggling with, should I move? Should I not move? I'm talking from experience. I've spent quite a bit of time with this. Should I move? Should I da 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 da? Feeling guilty and all these kind of things that enter my mind. Be aware of getting caught in a cycle of doubt. And sometimes it's just clear that it's the wise thing to move or adjust the posture. Learn to trust yourself, to really trust your body, and to find your way that way. It's very helpful, for developed concentration to not move much. And to learn to be with discomfort when it arises, to be able to be at ease with discomfort, to relax into it. We can increase our capacity to be with what's uncomfortable. But if we do need to move, it's not wrong. But we can do it in a very slow, easy way, without judgment, in a way that doesn't disturb our development of concentration. It's really important to recognize that the movement of the mind, going from being very mindful to being judgmental, it's a much greater movement than shifting our posture. So that's a huge movement. So some pain comes from our conditioning, from chronic physical tensions, from emotional patterns, from traumas. Those kinds of pain can respond quite well to the factor of investigation. This kind of pain is pain we can get concentrated on. To work with it, I like to use an approach of what Shinzen Yang calls divide and conquer. And what we mean by that is, you know, we don't see it as one big pain, my shoulder hurts, but we pay attention to the many, many different sensations that make it up. You know, maybe there's burning, tingling, heaviness, heat, sharpness, contraction, breaking it up into small little pieces. When we look at pain as a whole, it can overwhelm us. It's just too intense, too big, too unrelenting, too unwanted. But when we break it up into small little pieces, it becomes manageable. Just this little piece at a time. And so another little approach is we can allow the attention to shift from one small part of the painful area. I imagine that like the right shoulder, right? One little spot of the painful area of the shoulder, one little piece at a time, kind of like a butterfly landing on it. You know, you feel it. Okay, that's enough of that. I'll go on to the next one. Just a little at a time. You just float in the discomfort. Just landing, little piece at a time. What's interesting when we do that, like when I've done that, I start out with what's most intense, what's the point of most intensity, and I hang there for a little bit, and then I notice it changes, you know, moves over a little to the right, so I go land on the right and see what that's like, but you don't have to stay with most intensity. Sometimes you can go to the edges. What are the edges of the pain, the very outer edges? You know, how do those feel? You know, and you notice the edges change. Everything in that thing we call pain is actually continuously changing and shifting. It's not a solid thing. You know, one thing though, in doing this process, sometimes the pain just goes away on its own. It's amazing how that happens, but only sometimes. And a lot of people, when they've had that experience once that it went away, they think that it's going to always go away. And so they go, okay, I'll pay attention with an agenda to make it go away. And so I just want to make you alert to that. So if you do that, you know, don't expect it to go away. It's just like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to the breath so that later on I can get concentrated. You know, it's like we start leaning forward. So, you know, remember that there's, you know, not to lean forward. It's like what's here right now. This is engaging with pain, with sensations of pain, is just as important as engaging with, mindfully engaging with the breath. It doesn't matter. It's the quality of engagement, the quality of knowing, the quality of sensing, the quality of awareness. So it doesn't matter what the object is. So, you know, just stay alert for those agendas that creep up sometimes. You know, I'm kind of talking fast because I want to share a few things with you, you know, and still give you time for questions. So, you know, I want to say a few things about chronic pain. Now, chronic pain is pain that's either always there or regularly recurs, like a migraine, you know, that can last for hours and hours or days even. In general, in mindfulness meditation, we usually suggest that we pay attention to whatever is most compelling. And so we might settle with the breath, but then if a compelling physical sensation, an emotion, a hindrance arises, thinking arises, we shift our attention because they're compelling. And then when no longer compelling, we return to the breath or the object of meditation or maybe to open awareness. But this approach of bringing our attention to what's compelling can be problematic for those of us with chronic pain. Because since the pain is either always there or frequently there, This approach can magnetize our attention to pain. And we can actually make the pain worse. And we also make it so that, oh, I'm going to go sit and hang out with pain. You know, it makes it pretty unwelcoming, you know, day after day, year after year. But it's really helpful to know that at any given moment, whether you're meditating or not meditating, no matter how much pain we have, we also have millions of other sensations we can pay attention to. We can notice our feelings, our thoughts, other people in the room, parts of the body that don't hurt. There's so many things. We can notice the sky, the earth underneath us, the sounds, the smells. There's millions of sensations available to the mind. And with pain, we tend to just magnetize. You know, wake up in the morning, there it is. The mind clumps to it instead of noticing the sun coming in through the window. So it's really important to demagnetize the mind from the pain when it's chronic. The pain can just be, it doesn't have to be pushed away. It's just one of those million of sensations or objects. And you've all done this already, you know, been in pain, maybe you had a headache, and somebody walks into the room and makes you laugh, and for that moment you forgot you had a headache. You know, attention was elsewhere. The pain was still there. You know, so we all actually know how to do this. So one of the things about... one of the methods to work with chronic pain is to systematically train the mind to gently move the attention to an area away from the pain, being careful not to do it out of aversion, but out of wisdom. Yeah, so it's like, oh yeah, it's much better for me to move my attention, not, I hate this, let me get out of here. You know, very, very different mental approach. So one of the ways to do it is to use a global sense of the body or of the body and breath, so that every breath we're feeling the whole body, and the pain is just one of those things we sweep through briefly. You know, so we inhale, feel the whole body, exhale, feel the whole body. And so having this broader way of feeling the sensations of the body minimizes the how important the pain is to us. We don't have to fixate on it. You know, another way of doing this is, you know, we inhale as if we're filling our whole body with air, and exhaling as if it's going out of our pores. You know, it's a visual, but it can be a kind of a felt visual. And don't do it in any rigid way. You know, don't try to do it right. You know, allow yourself to play with it, to be easeful. If it's a different way of being with the breath than you're used to, you know, don't, you know, just see how it is for you. And, you know, for myself, you know, I might be feeling the whole body, and at other times, you know, I inhale and feel about, you know, a cup's worth of body, and that's what happens. So that's fine, you know. But it's an approach, and it's an approach that moves me, shifts me away from that constant pain. One other thing about chronic pain: if it's chronic pain is in the face, it's really helpful not to have a primary object near the pain. So like having your nose as your object, the breath at the nose, and having really bad TMJ is, you know, will really keep your attention on the pain in the jaw. Whereas using a lower object of attention, you know, meditation object, can be really helpful. Same thing if you've got abdominal pain, you know, maybe, you know, focus on either the global breath or higher up. So, (clears throat) So sometimes we may miss the fact that our aversion to pain has become more dominant than the pain itself. You know, we just want to go away. How much longer? We're completely caught in aversion, but we're trying to pay attention. We think we're paying attention to the pain. And I did that many, many, many times. So, you know, be aware that that's a possibility to get caught there. You know, ideas like my practice is really going to start when the pain goes away. You know, I've got a headache. When the headache goes away, then my practice will start. So those kind of thoughts and ideas, you know, and we don't even recognize that they're not, that we're not really paying attention to what's going on. So, you know, think of it as, you know, we may have a primary pain, which is the actual physical pain, maybe an illness, an injury, or maybe even just fatigue, just heavy fatigue. You know, this is all the initial primary pain. And then we have like the secondary suffering, which might be which is a reaction to that primary pain. We might be tensing up against it, you know, bracing against it, and we actually can get a whole bunch of secondary physical pain that comes from tensing against the primary pain. And sometimes it's even stronger, you know, or as strong as the primary pain. Or a reaction might be emotional, you know, we don't want to be here, we're unhappy, we may get angry, fearful, depressed, anxious, despair, you know, all those emotions can arise. And it's so important to attend to those. Those become primary. Or we get caught up in unhelpful beliefs. You know, sometimes people have thoughts like, I'm a failure because of this pain, or I was so stupid I hurt myself, or, you know, endless stories we can tell ourselves. So, you know, pay attention to what's really there. Is it the primary pain, or is it the reaction to the pain? And if it's the reaction, very mindfully shift your attention to the reaction. You know, we have aversion to the pain. You know, we feel, you know, it's the pain of aversion, you know, the tightness, and, you know, sometimes for me, it's often in the abdomen when it arises. It's different than the primary pain, but it's still painful. Yeah, you know, so really explore the physicality of aversion. What's the aversion like? I love Shinzen Young has a form. It's pain times resistance equals suffering. So we all have pain, doesn't have to have suffering. We add resistance, and that causes the suffering. So it's, excuse me. So, if and when the aversion lets go, then you can see if you can attend to the sensations of the pain with a curious or interested mind. It may not be joyful, but it can be interested. So see if you can bring that interest. Being mindful of pain with interest and curiosity can bring really deep concentration. And that's something that I remember Gil saying, that, you know, he had a lot of pain on one retreat, and so he used it as a concentration object. And when the pain went away, he couldn't concentrate because he was so used to focusing on the pain. You know, but it's something you learn, not, you know, not that he only did that once. So the first time that I ever did that, where I really got interested in the pain, fully immersed in it, with interest and curiosity, I got very deeply, deeply concentrated, and it was so delightful, and I was so amazed, and I said to myself, this is a playground of pain. It was just so wonderful. But we're not always able to work with pain this way. Sometimes the concentration just isn't there, or we're too fatigued. That's why there's different ways, different approaches. And it's really important to be respectful of where we are at any given moment. If we're really fatigued, we just don't have the energy for the concentration needed for that kind of approach. We need to be gentler with ourselves. The guideline that I use is that if the mind becomes consistently grim and being mindful doesn't foster interest, then it's time to move the attention away from the pain. So if the mind can't stay, some semblance of things are okay, if it just tightens and just gets, really, really grim, we're not doing anything helpful to ourselves. We're actually hurting ourselves on some level. So it's fine. Just move the attention away from the pain. And we can, there's, so I'll just review like there's like kind of five different approaches we can use. Okay. So as I mentioned, the first one of investigating the details, the divide and conquer, floating in the discomfort where we just attend to one small area at a time. Notice the sensations, the specific sensations that make up the pain, instead of seeing it as one big mass. And as I said, we can investigate a reaction to it if we have aversion or emotional or cognitive reaction. But we can also broaden the field of attention. As I mentioned, you can attend to the body globally, to the breath globally. We can listen to sounds, anything that broadens the field of attention. For those of you who've never done listening to sounds, you know that Ajahn Sumedho, that's his primary object, the sound. And that's what he's always used, and I think Ajahn Amar also. It's a totally fine object of meditation. Or we can also narrow the field of attention with a very, very close attention to the breath, where we're keeping a very, very small area, small detail. And sometimes that can be really helpful. We shift away, completely away from the pain. Or we can shift our attention to a non-painful part of the body, such as, again, if you've got the headache, like walking meditation, you can really focus on your feet very closely, or really stay in the lower part of the body. Or sometimes people find it really helpful to switch to metta. And the focus on metta can be really helpful. So those are some suggestions there. And I'll just say one more thing, It's helpful to just remember that the simple act of calming the mind in meditation actually decreases our perception of pain. That's why a lot of people, as you go deeper into the retreat, for a lot of people, the pain begins to recede. It's not always the case, so that's why we give these different methods. But there's a study, where they tested longtime meditators of how sensitive they were to pain. And they used an electric shock. And they found that the brain response to the shock was 45% lower than in the control group. But then it's the same electric shock, just caused physically, physiologically, 45% less pain. And then they took the control group and they trained them in meditation for 5 months. They did daily meditation. And in 5 months, they were just as good as the long timers. So it doesn't take that long to develop enough skill to decrease our perception of pain. But you really need the daily, daily practice. You know, so for those of you with chronic issues, you know, sometimes people love retreats and they don't have such a strong daily practice. So with pain, it's essential. It's really essential with chronic pain. And, you know, and lastly, I just want to remind you that when we struggle with pain or suffering, and that the wise response to suffering, whether it's someone else's or our own, is kindness and compassion. So whatever method we find helpful is most helpful when it's nourished by kindness. So really keep in mind whenever you meet this particular challenge, you know, that it needs kindness, compassion, a light touch. So thank you for listening, and we have time for some questions. And I see there's something in the... Oh, I'm sorry, someone said they wanted the volume turned up. And did anybody else have trouble hearing? I'm just curious. No. Somebody else did. Oh, wow. Okay, let me see. This is automatic usually. Preferences. It's automatically supposed to get it right, but okay, we'll see if we can do it manually. Okay. Is this a little better? Okay. Okay, so I'll leave it on that. So I think it's the first time. I'm sorry I didn't notice sooner, Meryl. I apologize. I'm on a new laptop and everything's so tiny compared to what I'm used to. So we'll go ahead and if you have questions, use your Zoom hand. You can find it under reactions. And I'll just go in the order of anyone who has anything to ask. And Sally. And please unmute. Yeah.
So I've been counting the minutes until this meeting, since the beginning of the retreat. The overview is that over the first decade of my practice, and what brought me into practice was an injury. It wasn't some lofty goal of enlightenment. And I had met Stephen Levine and was doing... He had recorded a pain meditation specifically that was based on the practice. And I did 3 times a day, 45 minutes. And then I got involved in intensive retreat practice. And what I learned was to notate sensation instead of just reacting or even calling it pain. And I would discover even during the course of sitting that something would change. And I had the same experience that Gil had, that after a little over 10 years, when the injury had healed for a particular reason, when I did intensive longer practice, like 14 to 21 days, I lost my focus. Like, I didn't really want to be in pain again, but I found that I had to focus on the pain in my knee or just something else, but I didn't want the pain back. And then there was a 13 year period where I wasn't in chronic pain. And then my neck was broken 16 years ago. So at that point, it's kind of a long retreat that you don't choose. And I was paying attention, and I've been in chronic pain now for 16 years, and it was added to by the discovery that I needed bilateral total hip replacements. And so I've got pain coming from above and below, and it's I wake up in pain, and the pain can be sharp or dull, and it's throughout the retreat so far, and I have forgotten, literally forgotten, how to, I don't know how to say it. It's like the overwhelmingness of the pain in my hips and being told that I should have surgeries, it's different from the chronic pain from spinal cord injury. I know that's never going away, and I can work with it more. But having been told that if I have these surgeries, that will take away the pain, I think has affected my capacity in practice to work with the pain. And it overwhelms me to the point where I can't focus the way you're describing, or the way Stephen used to describe sensation, find the spaciousness.
So what you, wait, I'm going to stop you for a moment, yeah. Okay? Because what you're saying is that, what you're describing is that what's really up for you is the overwhelming emotion around this.
No, the pain, yes, is the not the emotion, but I think the combination of then you won't be in this pain, but I'm in medical isolation because the spinal cord injury makes me medically vulnerable to COVID. So it has to be delayed. So over the course of the almost 3 years since I was diagnosed, these are all dance related injuries.
Sally, we really, see if you can keep it a little bit more concise. Okay. And get to a question, if you have a question.
Yes. I'd like you to go over, like you were describing it early on. I think that what has happened with the hip pain, as opposed to, I'm used to being in chronic pain from my neck and the broken neck. Even when it heals, you're in chronic pain. But the hip pain, which is sharp and I can note it, it doesn't.
Sally, I'm sorry, but I feel like this isn't working for the group as a whole. So if you'd like to send me a note, and I'll meet with you, and we'll can talk about it, okay? Because I think you need more time to get right to whatever needs to be attended to.
It's just I'm just asking you to specify what you meant about breaking it down into the parts, instead of like the overwhelmingness.
Okay. So I'll go over that. Okay. So, okay. Okay. That I can do. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
For instance, if there's a pain, take the right hip, you're going to look at the right hip. Look for the center of the pain. What's the most intense spot? And you land your attention on the most intense spot, and then you do what you're used to. Feel the sensations there, burning, tingling, whatever sensations are there. And then after, don't stay there too long, and then move on to another spot. And then just keep moving all around the area. And you can also move to the periphery of it and feel the edges of it. So that's one approach. But I'm not sure that's the best approach if you have intense pain. So, but that is something that works, and you can't get concentrated on that if your mind is alert enough. So I hope that answers your question, Sally. And again, so we're have room for other questions if there are any. And I'm sorry if I cut you off short. It's just, wanted to honor the fact that there are other people who may have questions. And Susan.
Hi. Just to the point that Sally made, if I may, about the surgery causing a problem, because I was living in chronic pain as a result of, as you know, Inez, spondylolisthesis. And the idea of surgery was what I was pursuing. And then when I stopped pursuing that, because I got another opinion that this surgery would be really not good for me, I gave up that sense of helplessness that was the second arrow, if you like, the helplessness. So then I realized it was something I could do because a friend who's an orthopedic surgeon recommended working out with this kinesiologist. And since my surgery was way in the future, I did that. I'm pain free.
I'm very happy for you.
I thought you might want to hear that.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm very happy to hear that.
Thank you. And I'm not doing the surgery.
Great.
They've been calling me several times to do this surgery, but
great. Thank you. Tony.
Ness, a lot of what you talked about was for physical pain. Can you apply the same thing to mental or emotional pain, such as grief or fear, things of that nature?
Well, you know, grief or fear with emotions, we apply, the part that we apply is feeling the sensations in our body and feeling the, you know, for instance, you know, with fear, you know, like I get my solar plexus tightens up really tight with fear, right? You know, so I'll feel like kind of these shooting strings kind of, you know, in that's how my mind perceives them of, you know, and they kind of jump around and it's tight and it's, you know, so I look at the very details of that physicality. And that allows me to relax everything and, you know, ride the fear like a wave, you know, because the fear rises, it has a lot of energy, and then it goes away. So, you know, emotions, strong emotions don't last that long, you know, because they come and go. So if we can just attend to them, you know, they'll go away. You know, grief is a different story because grief, it may have like an episode of grief, but there's like, you know, grief has a whole underlying mood and, you know, so it's a very different, it's not one of these emotions like anger and fear that arise and fall away.
So as you say, it's best to get in contact with your body and get out of sort of your mind or your head.
And to differentiate between, first of all, you know, with emotions, we talk about the RAIN formula or the RAFT formula. Okay, so we'll use RAFT, which is to recognize it, you call it. You know, that helps a lot to name it. You already have a little objectivity and to allow it. You know, it's okay it's there. It's okay that I'm scared. And then to feel it in the body. And then to tease it apart, and that's, you know, what Gil was referring to, the relationship to it. You know, for instance, if I'm afraid, like, you know, I used to be very, very shy around people, you know, and I'd walk into a room and it's like I'd feel all awkward, everybody's looking at me type feeling, you know, and you know, so I'd be afraid. And then my relationship to it was that I shouldn't be afraid. You know, I shouldn't be afraid. So that would like make it even worse because I was so wrong about being afraid, right? And so it started healing when I finally said, yeah, I'm afraid. And it's okay, I'm afraid. And so my relationship to the fact, oh yeah, it's the conditions that I'm afraid. I grew up this way and these are my conditions and I'm afraid. And slowly, you know, then the fear wasn't so much of a problem. You know, so the relationship to is really essential, how we are with these emotions. Yeah. And Jennifer.
Hi, thanks. You caught my attention when you said that emotions like fear are temporary and transitory, it does not feel that way.
So, and I'll tell you, yeah, I was trying to do a shortcut there, so I'll say a little more. If you're in almost car accident, the emotion of fear rises, falls away within about a minute and a half at the most. The chemicals in your body hang around longer. And, you know, your heart's still beating really fast, even when the danger's passed. You know, they can take like 4 or 5 minutes to go away, you know, depending on the hormones, okay? So that's a very specific fear. Now, what sometimes people think, call an emotion, is anxiety. And anxiety is, in one way of calling it, it's an unspecified fear. And it's like we keep re-triggering the same fear. So it seems like it's hanging out. But our thoughts keep triggering the fear. Like, for instance, I'll put it a different way. I'll use fear, panic attacks to give you a better context. Okay. Let's say we're afraid, we got afraid of something, and the chemicals are still in our body. So we don't know why we're afraid. So we get afraid of the fact that our bodies are still stressed, and it can cycle. And you get, oh my God, it's just going, and can't control it. And you get more and more, and it can trigger a panic attack. So a lot of panic attacks, people who get them really relax when they begin to trust the fact that it's just fear coming and going. But it takes time to work with that. But the idea is that what triggers each wave of fear is a thought. Anxiety is sustained by thoughts. So it's really looking at our thought patterns that are triggering this that's really essential. You know, usually it's, you know, thoughts about our future, right? You know, often it's thoughts about our future, or thoughts about how somebody sees us, or et cetera. And just the sustaining it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Yasha. Jaisha.
Thank you. Thank you for your effort. Can I share what helps me with that? We're just discussing. I'll try to be quick. Recently I had a state of mind that was depression, and I kind of knew it was transitory, but it was staying kind of very strong. And at some point, I'm trying to find my body again, there was this little voice inside that said me, yeah, there's a state of mind that's kind of depression, but your body's not depressed. Kind of discover the rest of your body that is there, and go back to a place of the body that feels stable. And then with the anxiety that you just described, Inez, yeah, when you started to mention dissected, kind of going to feel it in little pieces, I went like, okay, so if I approach it with curiosity, how can I describe it with my body? And then the word that came was electricity. This feels like electricity. And then it was manageable. And with the thoughts of a storm coming to Puerto Rico right now, again, after we had a hurricane 5 years ago, from which we haven't still completely recovered, I saw the thoughts of my mind starting to rise, and my mind, I was up there as a balloon with anxiety, kind of like, and it was difficult to bring it down. But then when I started to name it, oh, this is electricity, and it was helpful. And then also I do vagus nerve exercises, you know, touching parts of my body that, you know, help kind of tell the nervous system, which sometimes it doesn't understand words, but it understands if I touch a part of my body, and then the nervous system understands there's no real danger, you know, there's no danger. And that also helps. So anyway, just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Yeah, as I said, there's a lot of different approaches to these different things. And yeah, I wanted to say one more thing in relation to Tony's question, and what Chaisha just brought up. There are moods that are different than the emotions, and things like depression and loneliness can be moods, and those don't come and go, and there's different ways to work with those. So just to make sure that that's clear, that it's not all this wave that comes and goes. So, and Meryl.
Unmute. Okay. Hi, Eunice.
Hi, Meryl.
So I have problems with my neck that I've had for 50 years, and I've been living with it. I've learned techniques, but recently, sleeping, it seems like if I even move like a quarter of an inch when I'm sleeping, I'm waking up multiple times at night in pain. So this might not be appropriate for here, but in a way, I have had chronic pain that wakes up a lot during the day, but it's easier for me to do that than when I'm trying to sleep or when I'm totally exhausted. So why don't we just leave the total, I don't know which, if you have any response to either of those, or if it's not appropriate now, I get it too.
When we're tired like that, when we're sleeping, we don't have the resources we have during the day. That's really common. And sometimes what's the most helpful is a little bit of metta towards the area, may my neck be free of suffering, a little compassion. And sometimes that can be helpful, just a very gentle metta towards ourselves. May I be free of suffering. And just, see if you can lull yourself to sleep with metta. And just on a practical basis, for that kind of pain, and maybe you already do this, but using a hug pillow so your arm isn't dropped down can be really helpful. I don't know if
Thanks. You did that. I don't know what a hug pillow is, but I'll
It's just a pillow, any pillow that you can hold, and so you can actually rest if you're laying on your right side, so you can rest your left arm on it.
Sort of like if you had a body pillow, you could sort of do that with
A body pillow would work. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay. It's like there's versions of that. I can use a regular pillow for that. So that your arm is just resting on something so it doesn't tug quite as much on the neck. For a lot of people, that makes a huge difference.
Thanks. I do metta. And I usually get up, sit for a while. As soon as I fall back.
Only for yourself.
No, that's what I do. I usually do compassion for myself.
Right.
But as soon as I go back to sleep, it's that same movement that will call me up again. But I'll try the pillow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Robbie.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I've noticed my pain comes after I get up or as I get up. So I'm laying there in bed, and I actually did this yesterday morning, and it actually worked. This is from Gil's talks. I started thinking, okay, knowing, what am I knowing? I'm knowing that I finally realized that I was having aversion about getting up. And I wasn't in pain in my bed, except for that I was very tight. But the minute I get up, I'm in dire pain all over my body, the muscles and the joints. And once I get in the shower for a while, it softens. And I'm still like not feeling good all day, but it's not at all like in the morning. And I finally did that. What am I knowing? And I'm knowing this pain, but I'm knowing that I'm really averting it right now. And I used to think I was just relaxing. No, I'm inverting it, and I'm creating this dukkha by thinking about it. And I just want to know, is there some kind of situation where you just say, okay, I'm going to give myself permission to have dukkha for 15 minutes, or I'm going to give myself permission to avert. I don't quite know how to get around that first 15 minutes. And then I do the knowing, then I do the feeling, like you said, and then I try to relax, but the relaxing's hard because my body's so tight. I just don't know how to approach those first 15 minutes. And I'm lucky that that's my major thing right now. I mean, I'm sore all day, but I'm...
The first 15 minutes of getting up.
Before getting up. Getting up is where the pain starts.
Yeah, so you're talking about the time before the pain starts.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about the pain.
Yeah, yeah. So first of all, is recognizing here you have this wonderful respite of pain, and you're spending it creating pain for yourself.
Right, and I see that. I see I'm creating dukkha.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can retrain yourself, and I'll show you how. Plan tomorrow morning to get up right away, but do it this way. Ask yourself, as you're laying down, is there pain here? You know, and if there is, notice where, okay? Then just move, you know, if you get up on the right, you know, just slightly turn your body and say, okay, how am I here? Okay, that's okay. You know, then bring your legs over. How am I here? You know, and then notice the moment that, you know, you just pay attention to the whole transition. Whole transition. You know, it's a very powerful practice to do that.
And I'll then, try that.
You know, and that can actually help decrease the pain you have the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of moments where that pain gets decreased. But if you're doing that aversion, those first 15 minutes, you're probably bracing against your pain the rest of the day too.
Yeah.
So you find little moments. Yeah. Yeah. Little moments in the day where the pain recedes. So appreciate those.
Okay. I'll try that. Thank you so much. It helps a lot.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
How about reaction? I wanted to ask you, my right foot, I developed a pain. Is it sciatica? Is it due to sciatica, you think?
I can't diagnose you by Zoom tile.
What?
I can't diagnose a Zoom tile.
Oh. No, but yeah, you know, on the foot. I developed a foot on the heel pain.
Yeah.
Do you think it's sitting too long in one position, possibly, or how would I make it go away also?
You know, I don't know what's going on with your body, you know. So if it's sitting, you sit cross-legged, right?
Yes. Yeah, but then now I'm sitting also on the chair. And I haven't found 100% comfortable in one position all the time.
Yeah, so go back and forth. But let me ask you, is the pain constant or not constant?
No, it's constant, but it's constant, but it's not very bad.
Does it go away when you go to bed?
No. Oh, I haven't noticed that.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
So go ahead and do a little bit lying down meditation, see if it goes away. You know, because if it's coming from like a sciatic type pain from the low back, some people find relief in laying down, and you might need to give it that kind of rest. You can practice laying down. Have you ever done that?
Never.
So do it with your knees bent.
Yeah.
And, you know, pillow under the head. Don't do it in bed. Do it in a soft surface.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a few methods to use. And one of the methods is a common method is to have your hand like this.
Right. You
know, resting on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
If you fall asleep, it drops down.
Right.
Wake you up.
Okay.
Another method is you keep your knees about 10 inches apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you fall asleep, they collapse.
Yes.
And I'll give you the third method, if it's not too much.
Okay.
And this is actually the method that I've used in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the least popular method, but I like it.
Okay.
Okay. And I put my hands like this, like they do in Zen, one hand on top of the other.
Uh-huh.
The thumbs barely meeting.
Okay.
Keep that in my belly.
Okay.
And so, you know, I feel my, like I can feel my belly going up and down. Mm-hmm. And then the idea is to keep your fingers so they're barely touching. And so if you start falling asleep, you lose the circle.
Okay.
And so for me, that keeps my attention really sharp. So do that and see, because if you don't have pain in that position, then your back needs a rest from the pressure of sitting.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Arnica Jow or something I should try?
Oh, I don't, you know, feel free to do it. That doesn't hurt. So it's, I'm not the time for medical advice right now.
I know. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So this is the time we had. Unless somebody else has one more thing, I could do one more question. No. Okay, so it looks like we're good. So thank you all for your questions, for sharing. John, I think, is in the room, and I think he's recording. So if anybody wanted to go over any part of it, feel free to do that. So thank you so much. And I really, I wish you that this helps reduce a little bit of the dukkha around pain. So thank you.